All right, you're with Bill Benica, and my guest today is Robert Betancourt. Hi, Robert. Welcome, sir.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be with you.
All right, good. I'm sorry. I should have told you. You have to get that back where they're down there. Okay. All right?
I'm here with you now.
Okay, now we're there. We're tuned in now. We're dialed in. Robert is the family law attorney in San Luis Obispo, and my first question really is going to be this, even though I have other questions to ask you. Tell me, what is family law?
Well, family law has got a lot of components to it, and typically people think of it in terms of divorce. It also involves child custody, visitation, monetary support for children and for spouses, a lot of complexities to all of that. And then, of course, people have related questions, especially in today's economy where they have a house together and you need to figure out what to do with that house and what to do with the debt most often to do with that house, and how to split up retirement accounts, how to get money just to pay for the attorney, and whether one party has income and the other party perhaps is a stay-at-home mom, how do you get that person to have some money to be fairly represented on an equal playing field. So all of that's family law.
Now, do you, as part of a family law guy, do you ever do, what do I want to call this, arbitration, so to speak? Do you ever get to both parties in there and say, look, let's try to sort this thing out so it's not a disaster? Or do you just get hired by one of the other people?
Typically, I get hired by one or the other, and I try and help both parties reach a fair compromise. But when I do that, I let the other party know that's not represented, that person, whether they be male or female, go out and hire their own attorney to at least give them guidance as to what the deal might be.
Right.
And we would talk about that in terms of a mediation rather than the term arbitration, which has a more specific meaning in our business.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
But between a mediation, there are some attorneys out there that hold themselves out as mediators for family law matters, and I don't do that. I represent people, and if I can help them reach an agreement that they're comfortable with, and the person that did not hire me goes out and gets a second opinion, if you will, from another attorney that's only looking at it from their perspective, and they come back to me and say, yeah, we want to ink this deal, then I'll help them do that.
Okay, now let's do another thing. First off, we're going to make it life easy, and we're going to call LORB, which is the law offices of Robert Betancourt. And so if you hear me say LORB, that's what we're doing. LORB. All right, so that's what I want to tell you about. Okay, so now, all right, let's go another direction here. If you're not doing mediation, but if do it, obviously with child support, a lot of times you end up in court. Obviously, you end up in court. Custody things, you end up in court. Alimony, end up in court. But are there divorces, are there not, that are sort of non-contested divorces that you just deal with the other attorney?
Sure. And before I lose the thought about obviously ending up in court, even that's not necessarily the case on some of the things that you mentioned. Many things can be adjudicated or resolved, rather, without actually going to court. To answer your specific question, can two people figure out a way, even with the attorneys involved, not to ever be in front of the judge, not to have to darken the courtroom at all?
Right.
Yes, that can be done. If they reach an agreement, it's called a marital settlement agreement. I can put that together, have them sign the appropriate forms. I'll process it through the courthouse, and they never have to appear in front of a judge even one time.
Okay.
As it relates to support issues, the child support, for example, you mentioned, a lot of times that can be done fairly simply. There is a software program that I use. In fact, it's available to the public in general on a state website. And you type in some information, some basic information, what is your income versus what is the other person's income, and what is your timeshare that you plan on? Maybe it's 50-50, or perhaps more often with a stay-at-home mom versus a workaday husband, which is maybe not as common as it was 30 and 40 years ago, still fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
You can type in that timeshare, 80% versus 20% income for husband, income for wife, hit a button, and it'll give you a pretty close approximation as to what it would be if you did go to court. And many times we figure that out outside of court, and we just do a stipulation.
No, I have to do it. Okay, we're gonna go. I went way forward before I went backwards, which I should have done. And when Robert first came in, and I asked, so I'm going to let you know this, I asked Robert if he was of the Betancourts of the Central Coast, and he said no. What is it?
Well, in the
Portuguese community, Betancourt is just like Smith. You
exactly.
said now. So you actually came from where?
I hail from Hanford, California.
Oh, okay. Right. And then where'd you go to law school?
in McGeorge in Sacramento.
Okay, in Sacramento.
Yeah, it's a very well-regarded school. We had a United States Supreme Court justice that taught constitutional law there before he was elevated to the bench, Anthony Kennedy, back in the 80s, yes.
I don't ever question where somebody went to school. You sit here as a man with a law degree, and I don't care where you got it, to tell you the truth. It matters to some people. They want to, I got mine at Harvard, Yale, whatever, that's fine, but it's, you know, to me it's unnecessary. Matter of fact, an interesting thing I learned some time back is medical schools were getting so hard to get into that a lot of people went overseas.
Well, or down to Guadalajara.
Or down to Guadalajara, yeah, really. You know, because there was just no way to get in anymore. So it's kind of crazy. Does that happen with law at all?
Well, I haven't heard of anybody going outside the country. I will say that I don't have any problem going to see a doctor that has been graduated from school in Guadalajara. At the same time, I do appreciate the fact that some people are attentive to where people went to school. And I went to an American Bar Association accredited school. Some schools are not accredited international, or rather interstate.
Okay.
An ABA school is.
Uh-huh.
And certainly I think it's important if you graduated at the top of your class. And so if you graduate cum laude or summa cum laude, which I did, then that's the kind of thing I like to emphasize to people. When
I think that's a good idea, too. You know, it's the age-old thing, you know. There's always somebody at the very bottom that made it. You know?
Right.
You have to ask yourself, who do you want to go see?
Exactly.
How'd you get into law? Why'd you decide law?
You know, I found that I had an affinity for it. Certainly, I have a good memory. That's an important thing to have to be able to practice the law. There's so many statutes out there and so much information that you have to maybe not remember all of it, but remember that you've seen it somewhere before and kind of know where to go and look for it.
That's like when you see all these a book of walls behind an attorney, and you know, these are reference things, and so you have to know which book to go grab.
Well, exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And I have, and most attorneys that do the kind of work that I do have the same issues, which is lots of information, a lot of financial information on many cases when you're dividing a marital estate. Even a smallish one has a lot of documents, just 12 months of bank statements. One single account has a fair number of documents to go along with it.
Wow.
And so what you have to be able to do is figure out how to take a lot of information, summarize it, take out those kernels that you really care about, annotate that somewhere else so that you can find it in a pinch. When you're sitting in front of a judge, they're not going to give you a lot of time to find the stuff. It better be at hand,
right.
or you're just going to have to say, well, I'll have to defer to the other attorney here because I can't find it. You don't want your attorney doing that.
Now, my guest today on Open for Business is Robert Betancourt, attorney, and he's our family attorney here in San Luis Obispo. There was another question I wanted to ask. Judges. The judges that hear your cases, are they usually pretty much the same people?
Yes, there are several family law judges in this county, and I do some work as well in Santa Maria, so northern Santa Barbara County.
Who are the ones in this county?
In this county, you have Judge Burke, who's in Paso Robles,
okay.
And then you also have two commissioners here in the actual courtroom in San Luis Obispo, and that sort of depends on where people live. If you live north of the Cuesta Grade, then you're going to end up in the Paso Robles Court. South of the Grade, you're going to end up in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, okay.
And so the two judges here are commissioners. They're both commissioners. They have all the same powers as judges, and they are experts in the field of family law. And those would be Commissioner Patrick Perry and Commissioner Gail Perrone.
Okay. See, now, they're not the kind of people you see in the newspaper a lot. You know, I mean, you get to know Barry LaBarber and some of these other people. You know, these judges, and you're familiar with their names because they do, you know, all this nasty stuff. Now, here's an interesting observation, though, that I have for family law. So to do family law, you don't have to have that tug of war in your brain about, do I want to be a prosecutor or a defense attorney? You know how those of us that are outside the profession all you go, I don't know if I could be a defense attorney. I just know I could do it. And yet defense attorneys have no problem being defense attorneys. But in family law, you're neither one of those things, really.
Well, that's a true statement, Bill, because there are burdens of proof that apply in criminal cases. The prosecutor has to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, for example. Even perhaps a less of a standard for civil cases, but still a plaintiff has the laboring oar has to prove their case. tie goes to the runner, if you will, in that scenario. Not so in family law. It's basically just you have a point of view to present, and the other side has their point of view to present, and ultimately a judge will decide between them.
All right. My guest is Robert Betancourt on Open for Business. We're going to return and talk to Mr. Betancourt after we do CBS News, which is next. This is Cinco de Mayo. This is Talk is Cheap, your friends and neighbors network. This is also 1340 KYNS in San Luis Obispo. Talking Sheep with Bill Benneke and with attorney Robert Betancourt on Open for Business. And I thank you for joining me today. And I thank Robert for being in here. And we're talking to Robert about first his law practice, how he started and got into law, where he went to school. And I guess I'm going to ask you the obvious question. 8 years ago, you moved to San Luis Obispo. And what brought you here?
Well, Bill, I started out of college. I got involved in the National Guard. And I've been doing that for a weekend a month for the last 20-some-odd years, and many of my training events took me as an artillery officer to Camp Roberts, and that's where the local range is throughout the state. That's where the artillery has gone to train, and also to Camp San Luis Obispo on frequent occasions for our small arms training. And so I was acquainted with the Central Coast from that professional aspect. I grew up in Hanford, just south of Fresno, and so it was a customary day trip with my folks to come all over to San Luis Obispo.
Right.
And then when I married, and this is my wife's second marriage, and she said, I don't like the Hanford area that you've moved me to. I would prefer a coastal environment. So you put all those things together, and I said, well, let's find somewhere that's close to home, on the coast for both of us, and we found San Luis Obispo to meet our needs.
Yeah. That's cool. That was interesting what you were talking about, your military thing. So luckily, I'm going to say this, you haven't been called up to go overseas, have you?
I did a year of overseas duty in Kosovo with the United Nations.
Oh, in Kosovo. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the United Nations mission in Kosovo. That was a hot conflict in 1999.
Right.
And it was for a relatively few months. Then it went down to what we refer to in the military trade as a low-intensity conflict.
Right.
And after September 11th, the active duty was sent around the world to hotspots. Of course, Iraq and Afghanistan are the most notable examples of that. And places like Kosovo became the proper environment for National Guard troops to go to. And so I went away for 18 months there. I was actually decorated by the NATO Secretary General with a Meritorious Service Medal for my service there, basically doing diplomatic type of work, not as an artillery officer, but as essentially using my skill set as an attorney and working in a general headquarters there.
How interesting. Yeah. How very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, because this whole thing, everybody's always curious these days. I'll just ask you one more thing about the military. Could you be called up to go to Afghanistan?
I could. I've been in the military now, as I mentioned, for more than 20 years. At my rank, and in today's environment, there is no World War III at this stage, and knock on wood, there won't be. Given my rank and the years that I've had in, if they called me and I said, you know, I'm just a few months away from being at retirement age anyway, and I have a practice that I'm trying to run here essentially by myself, it's a sole proprietorship, they would honor that and would not take me away now a second time after I've already gone and done my
Good,
duty
okay.
on that first occasion.
Good for you. All right. I've been there, done that myself. All right. Nazanat, what rank are you?
I'm a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, he's a lieutenant colonel. Okay. You notice I sat up straighter there, sir.
Right, I won't drop you for pushing.
Okay. Now, let's talk about what it – people don't know. People say, okay, you know, what if I get involved in this crazy divorce stuff? Because unfortunately, a lot of people are – half the people that get married get divorced. So a lot of people are always thinking about, okay, what's going to happen to me? For how much – so what do I would need an upfront money to hire you and say, okay, I want you to be my attorney?
Well, look, different people have different needs,
right.
First of all. And I always assess their needs and what they would benefit best from. And if someone is fairly confident, they have poise, they can answer questions in front of a judge without falling to pieces. And frankly, there are a lot of people that just cannot do that. It's just petrifying for a lot of people. Of course, one of the most difficult of all fears is public speaking,
right,
especially
right.
if you're under pressure and money's on the line, your
sure.
kids are on the line.
Sure.
So a lot of people need an attorney to be there with them and to speak for them. But if you don't need that and you just need the paperwork filled out and to be able to make one appearance to deal with what is my spousal support going to be or what is my child support going to be, and that's the only issue that you have in front of you, just putting the papers together for you and posturing you to do well we can do that for less than $1,000. Okay. In some cases, $500 to $750.
Okay.
But that's the range we'd be talking about for a single appearance, the paperwork, and again, posturing you, putting that declaration together so you look good in front of the judge even before you get in front of the judge, because they read the papers before the hearing. So you want to posture someone for success. So we do that for the people that could benefit from that kind of assistance, as compared to a full-on, what we refer to as full representation divorce, where someone says, I've got property, I've got children, there are support issues, there are spousal support issues, there are going to be multiple hearings to get us from the beginning to the end. And we would charge a retainer. Typically, that's on the order of $4,000 or $5,000 as a retainer. And then we bill against that at an hourly rate. And if that is gone, we let you know that you're going to need some more funds to be able to make this happen. Maybe that means taking money from a home equity line on some cases. Perhaps that's taking a disbursement from a retirement account and so forth. Again, if you don't have the money and your spouse does, there are ways to get the court to order the other spouse to pay some or all of those fees. And some people have such a low income, they shouldn't avoid having an attorney. I can help them process the application to get a fee waiver so that they don't even have to pay the fees that would otherwise be required to the court.
Here's, and this seemed like an obvious question, I hope, but maybe not. Maybe people don't ask this. All right, so you said that you can probably sit down and calculate with someone, you know, what, let's say they're going to pay alimony or child support, whatever, that, you know, there's formulas that the judges follow and everybody sort of seems to know. Does that hold true also in cases where you're going to have visitation rights and you're going to have child custody things? Can you sort of gut feel where that's going to go before you ever get into court?
Well, I'll hear what the people tell me, especially my client, about what the history has been.
Right.
And one of the things that I would mention too, even before you get a judge to decide something as gut-wrenching as child custody and child visitation can be, the judges are going to expect the parties to go to mediation beforehand. And there are folks that work for the county at or near the courthouse. And even on the day of the hearing, if I walk in there with my client and say, Your Honor, we're here today to talk about child custody and visitation, but the parties have not yet been to mediation, and I think that they should, the court will route them immediately that minute. If the court mediators are available, and they usually are, they'll take the people in and help them come to an agreement themselves on what the best interests of the children are. It's so much better if the parties compromise a little bit, if they feel that that's a compromise. It's better to do that than to put it all in the hands of a judge who effectively becomes the parent for the child or for the children.
Right, right.
And so if they can work it out there, everybody is benefited. And my job is to help my clients see, this is what you should push for in mediation. This is where I think it would be appropriate to be reasonable or to concede a little bit, because you want to show that you are reasonable by the time you get in front of that judge. The judges are trying to figure out who's the unreasonable one. I mean, that's my own sense of it. I haven't been a judge, but I think that's what they're looking for.
Well, I think you know what they're looking for. That's why I'd hire you. Now, here's the other thing, too. So I suppose that where it really gets really screaming ugly is the when you have two parents and both want to be in custody of the child. You know, and then you have to get into, this is why I'm better and this is why this person's not better and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and my job, and attorneys are trained to have two basic hats, one as a counselor and one as an advocate. And the counselor is, it's you and me, Bill, you're my client, we're in closed doors. Let me tell you, attorney-client protected privilege here, you're the guy that's working for a living, the wife, in perhaps your case, is not. She's been the stay-at-home mom. The status quo, the history has been that she's been taking the care of the kids perhaps for the last 6 months. You've been living outside the house. You've had a decent arrangement where you've seen the kids every weekend or every other weekend, but now you've decided you don't like that arrangement. You want it to be 50-50, a week on, a week off, or something like that. It would be my job in that circumstance. You've paid me good money to help you get the best result I can for you. It won't do me any good to tell you behind closed doors, oh, yeah, tell the judge you want 50-50, a week on, week off. That's a great argument. And then when we get in there and the judge says, well, the status quo has been this for the last 6 months. I see no reason to change it. So I rule for the wife. The weekend status quo is going to continue. And then I'll say, oh, that bad judge, they didn't rule the way that they should have. I didn't do you any favors if I hadn't told you up front probably the status quo is going to be important to that judge. Yeah. It may not be where it goes. There may be other factors that, you know, maybe you found that she got arrested for drunk driving last week or she's bad mother in some other regard.
Right.
But all of the things being equal, that status quo is going to be a real hurdle to get past. And I at least need to tell you that before you walk in there.
And that's an interesting thing. And I, you know, traditionally, people that I had known that were divorced, you know, had it was generally a visitation, and you know, you saw them on the weekend, and maybe sometime during the weekend, that kind of thing. And that's how it is. This 50-50 thing, and this is just my opinion. And if you want to voice your opinion as an attorney, this 50-50 business where a kid goes to one parent for a week and then the other parent for a week, I would find it to be absurdly tough on a kid.
Well, I'll tell you, there is a policy of the law for frequent and continuing contacts with both parents. The traditional work cycle where someone works Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, has the weekends off, that is just traditionally lends itself to having a weekend with a child, perhaps every weekend, perhaps every other weekend. It would have to be, and it is, the unusual parenting plan where it's a week on, week off. Particularly when it's contested. People work out whatever deal they can and do many times that the judges never even know about. But when somebody's going to go up in front of a judge and try and argue that 50-50 is good and someone else says 50-50 is bad, I would say 9 times out of 10, 50-50 being bad is the way the judge is going to come down on it.
It's only fair to ask you this, I think, so people know this. So it would seem to me that as an attorney, that part of your job would be to find out as in any way you could, as best you could, if I say, well, my wife is she's been arrested for drunk driving 5 times and all that, and it would seem to me that those are the kind of questions you're going to ask anyway. Are you not going to say, you know, is there a reason you believe that you would be better should have sole custody or you should have joint custody in another way?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we have a very detailed initial consultation and meet several times and confer over the telephone several more times before the hearing so that we can not be surprised in front of that judge about this kind of information, whether it's good for us or bad for us. As I mentioned before, I would have 2 hats. One is your counselor behind the scenes and the other is your advocate in front of the court. But if you and I have decided that your interests are the better ones and I can make that argument with a straight face and not be surprised by my own client having a criminal record that he or she didn't happen to tell me about, that would be the type of thing that we would discuss behind closed doors and make sure that those good points are brought out in front of the court. And then if we have some bad points, we'll make sure that we have our explanations ready for those.
Yeah. Let's do this right now so people can start to get this idea. You are at LORB.com?
Actually, I'm at slowfamilylawyer.com.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I was told something else. I couldn't remember what it was. Slow Family Lawyer. All right. So slowfamilylawyer.com is Robert's email address, and I'll write that down so I don't screw it up again. All right. I got that written down. So
yes, the LRRB is just Law Offices of Robert Betancourt. It's just a shorthand expression, but slowfamilylawyer.com
is the website. So way to go. Do you have kids of your own?
You know, my wife, as I mentioned, had been married once before, so I helped her raise those kids from the age of 7 and 6. I'm quite familiar with the blended family concept, and so from that, yes.
And we have, and obviously, we have quite a bit of that more and more in our society. And then at that point, sadly, when things go bad, it just gets really just completely whacked out. You know, I would imagine. You know, I think it's really tough. It's a kind of an interesting thing about the job of an attorney, in my opinion, is that you're seeing people. I don't care if you're a prosecutor trying to put a bad guy away. I don't care if you're a defense attorney trying to keep the bad guy from going away. I don't care if you're a family law attorney. You generally don't get to see people at their best, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? There's usually some angst or huge problem, you know, that they're in.
You know, that's very true. Although I'll tell you, a gentleman, one of my National Guard friends who in his real world was a criminal defense attorney. And I told him I was going to be doing the family law deal some many years ago now. And I remember him telling me, oh, I like the criminal law better. And I had to ask him why, because I wasn't doing criminal law at that time. And he said, well, because with criminal law, you get to see the worst people on their best behavior. And with family law, it's the reverse. And unfortunately, that's so often true.
That's funny. That's a great line. No, that's true. You're right. It is true. Very interesting. I asked last time I had a colonoscopy, I had to ask the doctor, why would you ever gotten into this, you know? But he had a wonderful answer to me. He said, I get to try to find things that are wrong with people before they're a real problem. I thought, well, that's really good. Sure. You get to be involved with people when they're up to their necks in alligators.
You know, I really feel like that. And I've done different types of law over the years, and I found this one to be very meaningful. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like I am essentially a type B personality. I will allow things to come in. I'll process them. I almost never get angry. I'm certainly assertive, if necessary, aggressive in the courtroom. But never with angst, certainly being civil and being appropriate in all things, and in large part because it would not do my client any favors to be a rowdy person in the courtroom.
Right, right.
The judges are not appreciative of that in my experience. But having said that, I do feel like when a client comes in and needs to be helped to see where they can benefit themselves. Many times people don't know what they even need to say, what a judge would be impressed by. That's what you're hiring that lawyer that's been there to do.
Sure.
I've been in that courtroom. I've seen what works and what doesn't work, and I'm going to help you focus your arguments where they'll do you the most good.
So therefore, I'm going to ask you this question. You have gotten to know these commissioners and judges, and so and they're obviously very different. I would imagine they're pretty much different. And so you probably need to tailor what you do to who you're about to talk to.
You know, that's true. I mean, you do this for a number of years, and you start to find out what impresses one judge versus another and what area they want to emphasize. Family law in particular has a lot of areas where judges are given discretion. And I won't say unbridled or unfettered, but they have a lot of discretion on what evidence they consider, what law they will apply. You might think that it's black and white, that the law says X or Y, but frankly, if a judge has to decide in the best interest of children,
right,
will it be 3 days a week or four? Will it be just 2 weeks in the summertime or more than that? And the judge doesn't have to tell you why he or she rules some way. And if I want to get my client 6 weeks in the summer and the other side saying absolutely no more than two, you know, I've got to do my best to get you the argument and make the argument I think that's going to impress either Commissioner A or Judge B from the experience I've had with those judges in the past.
I'm going to say this. But the way you said it, you know, it can be very rewarding, and I can see that it can be, because in the long run, hopefully, the family will benefit best, even though they're now apart from it. It still has to be very painful, I would imagine, to have all this hokum pokum over the kids, you know, all this fighting over kids. It has to be very, very hard.
It is difficult, and as I say, I feel like, and if that's my calling, if you will, then so be it. It's certainly something I feel drawn to do. I feel like I can do it well, and I don't have a problem telling somebody bad news if I know that what they want to say, it's in them to say it. I'm going to let them say it to me. They can get their catharsis telling it to me, and then I can let them know I hear you, I understand you. At the same time, I'm confident this will not help you if you say those exact same things to a judge. So let's get it out here and now, and then let me help you craft the arguments that you want to make. Ultimately, if a person just says, no, I absolutely want to say these things, we can either decide you need to hire someone else to make those arguments for you, or I'll tell you, hey, for informed consent, do what you want to do, but I'm telling you this is unwise. And we'll go in there and we'll make the best of it as we can. So that's what my charter is for you as
an attorney. And I can tell with the way you're telling me this, and I can tell by the look on your face, that this happens more than occasionally, that you probably get some pretty angry people that wanted to go in there and speak their mind.
Well, absolutely. And yeah. And people will come in and say, I know a friend A or someone I worked with that got this or that result, but they know nothing else about what happened with that case, why it went one way versus what I might be telling them that they can expect in their particular circumstance. And they don't want to hear many times the bad things about their case, the things I think this particular judge that they're assigned to for their case will be impressed by against them or for them. So my job is to emphasize those things where I think I can do them the most good and tell them, for the benefit of informed consent, this is where I think you have some risk. And so if you're going to concede somewhere, this is where I think that it should be. And if they disagree with me, then so be it. I'll make the best argument I can for them. But again, with the understanding that I'm telling them I don't think that's the best path for them to take, and then let them decide.
Robert Betancourt's been my guest today on Open for Business, and this is one sharp attorney, I can tell you right now. To get hold of Robert, you would go on the internet to slowfamilylawyer.com. That's slowfamilylawyer.com. We might as well give out a phone number.
Yes, absolutely. It's here locally in San Luis Obispo is 549-9876.
9876. Okay.
You'll get Tina there, and she's a jewel.
Okay, wonderful. Slowfamilylawyer.com, 549-9876. Our guest has been attorney Robert Betancourt for Family Law, and it's been fascinating and a lot of fun to have you in and talking to you, and I appreciate it, sir.
Pleasure is mine, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.